for the purpose.
What you're about to see is totally classified.
Dear God, what is this?
Autobots, transform and roll out.
Now, all we need is a little energon and a lot of luck.
Welcome to another fun-filled episode of Pod Culture. I'm Brad.
I'm Glenn.
And I'm Christina.
And I'm Ryan.
Hi, yes, Ryan.
Yes, we have a fourth person in the studio with us
Welcome
this evening.
Welcome back, Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much. All right. What's everybody been up to? Let's get going. Let's kick it off with a newbie.
He's not a newbie. He's been on before.
Yeah, new enough.
JV, I guess you'd call
okay.
it.
Okay.
I'm just in town visiting my good old high school buddy, Glenn.
Glenn graduated?
Yes, aww, many years ago.
Okay.
So, just in town, checking out some movies this week. Saw Die Hard, saw Transformers, which I'm sure we'll get into since we've all seen it now.
Transformers, like, twice, though, didn't
you? I've seen it twice, too, as a matter of fact. So, and that's about it for me.
Glenn?
I don't remember. I worked a little bit this week. And
yeah, you had a long day the other day, didn't you?
Yeah. It was weird. I was off on 4th of July, but I had to be at work at like 5:30 in the morning on Thursday, so
ooh,
ended up having
cruel.
To go to bed at like 9:30 at night. It was like weird.
Okay, how do you manage that? Because normally you're just waking up about then.
That's the shank of the evening for you, five in the morning.
It was bizarre because, you know, I wasn't tired and I had to try to lay down to go to bed. And
Benadryl, worked wonders.
There was fireworks going off outside, mm-hmm. and then I finally got to sleep. And then a big storm came through with
that was terrible.
The loudest thunder I've ever heard. It was rough. So I had a rough day.
Yeah, that woke me up about 1 o'clock in the morning. I was pissed because I thought the kids were still sitting off fireworks. I got up. I was going to start cussing. All of a sudden,
boom.
Big thing. And I saw the lights flash. I'm like, no, that's not fireworks.
Yeah, that's least, God's display
yeah,
for
it's
you.
God,
when you want to cuss at.
It's God going, yeah, you want to see fireworks? I got your fireworks.
Yeah.
So I'm okay, like, probably ought to unplug the computer.
Yeah, when he turns off the computer, it's a monumentous occasion as what, like twice a summer?
it's more often than that, but, you know, got to give the poor thing a break every once in a while.
I know, but it was really bad.
So I had like worked like 13 hours, hadn't gotten a lot of sleep, came home, was eating dinner, and Ryan's like, hey, I'm coming by to get you. We're going to go see Transformers. I was like, okay, I guess that'll keep me awake.
And did it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We'll definitely have to have a special Transformers segment a little later in the show. Christina?
We saw Transformers and Fantastic Four, which we will talk about later.
Yeah, we had our custom double feature.
Yes.
You know, we had a
on 4th of July?
Absolutely no plans, no parties to go to or anything.
It was hotter
for
than hell outside.
So we're like, well, I want to see Transformers, want to see FF. Couldn't make up our minds which one to go see, so I said, screw it, we'll go see them both.
It was a 2:30 Transformers and a 5:30 Fantastic Four. So we're like, well, we'll be all right with that.
Yep, got out Transformers, walked out the door, turned right around, went across the hall and saw FF. And out of the two, like Transformers a whole lot better.
So. Other than that, lots of work.
Yeah.
Now, did you buy a second ticket, or did you do the old high school
special? No, we actually bought tickets.
Because I've seen a lot of double features, but they were sort of a two-for-one deal.
I've only done that one.
After, like, the age of 18, you kind of can't get away with shit like that. Yes.
I did it with my mom and my aunt. Hi, Mom and Aunt Anthony.
Yeah, but your aunt...
And this wasn't that long
your
ago.
And then you told on
her. A few cards short of a deck.
To the world.
But that was when...
And we actually, unlike some podcasters, our last names are actually on the site.
That's okay. My aunt's last name is different than mine.
All right. Let's see. I haven't been up to a whole lot of anything
lots
else
of work.
Other than lots and lots of work. Matter of fact, I got to work early in the morning after we get done recording this.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not real happy about that. So, Transformers, Fantastic Four, very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good.
Die Hard, cool as well.
Haven't had a chance to catch that yet.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to assume that he eventually says his infamous line of a sort.
More or less.
Is there an English actor in this one?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
Don't think so.
No, Alan Rickman, no. Jeremy Irons, no. Aw.
I will say that I thought the weakest part of the movie was that the villain was not a European sophisticated. That the villain was kind of weak, but the movie itself, I would say, was pretty good. It's, cool. It wasn't Transformers good, but it was pretty good.
Good.
All right. Well,
I'll have to check that out.
Guess we will have to call this an opening, and we will be back right after this.
Hello, NASCAR fans, and welcome to the Cup Car Update. This 5 to 10 minute bi-weekly podcast was created for the busy NASCAR fan who doesn't have time to surf for the latest news. We scan the news sites and summarize the stories for you, so if you've got a little time to kill on your morning commute, the Cup Car Update can get you up to speed. At the Cup Car Update, we're not trying to entertain you. We feel like NASCAR is pretty entertaining all by itself. So if you're looking for a podcast with colorful personalities and opinionated banter, this podcast isn't for you. If you're seeking a source for summarized news and information updates from the world of Nextel Cup Racing, then you've come to the right place. www.cupcarupdate.com, the news and information podcast created by NASCAR fans for NASCAR fans.
And we're back.
Welcome back.
And, of course, you know, this is normally the spot where we talk about what we've been watching on TV.
What's
and everything.
What's in the DVD player?
But being the summer movie season, we're going to change it up a little bit.
That's right. Blockbuster season.
Or movie gallery or movies. Oh,
no,
okay.
No.
Wrong blockbuster.
Not yet, anyway.
Summer movie season. So, let's start off. What have we been watching?
Well, I mentioned earlier Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Die Hard a lot. To roughly go back a little bit, it's been a long time since they had a Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
And Die Hard 3, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Sam Jackson.
Yeah. Wasn't in my book. It was good. I liked it. But it wasn't in my book as good as 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually, I don't know if you guys know this, but it was a Lethal Weapon script.
Huh.
That I did not know. And so they rewrote it as Die Hard.
I can see how they could be a little bit interchangeable.
Yeah.
And now that you had mentioned it the other day when we were talking, I'm looking at it going, yeah?
Yeah,
I can kind of see that.
So it was good. Everybody likes Bruce Willis anyway. Everybody loved his character. I noticed I love bloody violent movies.
No.
I don't like I like bloody violent action movies, mm-hmm. you know, that or that kind of thing.
As long as the blood and violence has a reason, right?
Right. As long as it's the good guy, you know, killing the bad guys, that's cool. And I didn't even notice that it was not an R-rated movie. I mean, there was so much action and stuff. Nothing got gory, and the language was toned down a little, but I didn't really miss it. And that's surprising, because normally, you know, man, I'd rather see an R-rated movie than something
else.
Yeah,
but you know, in today's thing, what would have been an R 20 years ago when we, you know, when... You know, first Die Hard or whatever came
it's
out.
It's practically G now.
It is pretty much PG or PG-13
right.
now.
That's true.
Actually, I'd have to disagree with that. I think in the 80s, there were a lot of action movies and even some things in other fields, genres, whatever you want to say, that they were actually more willing. If you remember in the first Die Hard, there was a scene of a couple having sex in the office. The one guy was snorting cocaine. It was extremely laced with profanity, so I think they actually were a little stiffer in action movies back in the 80s than they are now. They were not afraid of a hard R. Like, look at RoboCop. It originally got an X. So I think they actually are backing down now to get that PG-13 to get more teenagers in the theater.
Well,
there's
a difference with RoboCop, though. I mean, you actually saw his hand get blasted off by the shotgun. But
right, right.
Very, very cool.
But I just don't think that... I think that when they were making those movies, they were shooting for a nice R,
mm-hmm.
and now they kind of... They do pull back. The big difference with the diehards is the F word. That's what gets you an R. That's the difference between an R.
Aren't you allowed to say it so many times before you get another... Rating
I think it's twice.
Okay.
I think two times get you an R.
Okay.
But as I said, like, the first Die Hard had some other scenes in it quick, but that would not be in a movie nowadays. So I think we've actually backed off a little bit. I don't know why that is, but I think it is the case.
So I think we both liked it. Die Hard was pretty cool. I definitely recommend it. It's not lacking in action.
Christine and I haven't had a chance to catch Die Hard yet. I do want to see it.
Uh-huh. At some point. I vaguely remember the third one.
There are some things, and I won't get into it too much, that there are some scenes and situations and character subplot type things mm-hmm. that are similar to Transformers.
Huh.
That's what I've heard. I actually saw a little bit on that in USA Today, actually, today.
Okay, so I'm not really spoiling anything, huh?
Not too much. wasting time at work.
I guess just the whole the communication problems kind of thing mm-hmm. and the hacker angle.
Yeah, I kind of want to see that because of who the hacker is.
Who
yeah.
is it?
Kevin Smith.
Oh. There's no Alan Rickman. I'm not going.
Kevin Smith actually has a very small role.
I know, but you know.
He does have, I like his part in the scenes that he's in. I'll say I liked 3 better than 2. I've never been a big fan of Die Hard 2. 1 is the greatest action movie ever made, in my opinion. 3, I thought, had an interesting hook that took it in a different direction. And this one I would put above 2 and 3. I would say it's better than either one of those. And has a weak villain. But it has better snappy dialogue. It really has some really good dialogue between John McClane and the bad guy that's more reminiscent of the Hans Gruber relationship from the first movie. So,
oh, and one similarity to 3, I mentioned that the script for 3 originally was Lethal Weapon, but this was based on a book. There was a novel, but it wasn't a Die Hard book.
Okay.
At least to my knowledge, it wasn't a Die Hard book. I think they adapted the story and made it a Die Hard story.
I like that.
So that's kind
of
interesting.
We'll definitely have to catch that. We've hit 2, I guess, of the 4 summer mm-hmm. big ones, I guess, so far.
So far, yeah.
So on to the next one.
Yeah, for the next one. Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Finally got around to catching that as part of our custom-made double feature.
I still have not yet seen the first one all the way through. Shh.
There were some good things about it. I'm probably in the minority. I actually like the first one better.
I mean, that's usually how it goes, though. The first one seems a little bit better because mm-hmm. it's all new.
A lot of people said that the second one is better because, you know, you got the surfer. You know, you don't have to go through the boring origin story,
which I
actually liked.
Yeah.
I didn't have as much issue with it as I thought. Mm-hmm. But the surfer was cool. Didn't really need Doom in it at all, I think.
I'm not sure why. Yeah. I mean,
and
I'm not really sure why he was there.
You didn't really have Doom. You had Smiling Poster Boy again. Which, how they explained how he became whole again sort of made sense, but...
Kind of convenient, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because the actor wanted to see his face on the screen, not behind a mask.
Yeah.
Special effects were cool. Special effects were very cool.
Yeah, the stuff with the surfer was awesome, and I liked how when
Lawrence Fishburne is fabulous.
When Doom got control of the surfer's board, mm-hmm. it kind of became corrupted, and it was a little darker, like it was taken over by an evil type of energy. That did. I don't know if that was deliberate or they did it, but I think
there's nothing really by accident.
Cool.
I think if you like the first one, you'll like the second.
Oh yeah, I liked it. I like the first one better.
There's plenty of eye candy.
Yeah,
for everyone
Jessica
involved.
Jessica Alba and spandex. Yeah. What else do you need?
Exactly.
You
know?
That's it for me.
Yeah,
I'm done. And
I'll
almost
be in my
naked.
Bunk.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you. That portrayal of Doom is one of the biggest travesties of any superhero movie. I don't know where they got that idea, or how they. It just is annoying and not Dr. Doom. I don't get it.
It's not so much his acting. Is this at Doom? Okay, you know, I can see in the first one, you have him as a pretty boy throughout chunk of it, and then he gets the armor and the cloak and all that crap. I can see that. That's fine. But when he, you know, comes back, it should have been Doom, not Julian whatever the hell is Nick.
Yes. Nick McMahon, yeah.
McMahon. You know, Nick.
Nip-tuck.
Thank you. Nip-tuck.
He just plays it to me like as one of those over-the-top campy. I would say that's similar
that's
to the
Dr. Doom.
No, he's more of a hardcore. To me, it's like when Tommy Lee Jones was playing Two-Face in Batman 3.
Oh, yeah.
And he felt he needed to go the over-top route to match Jim Carrey, which is not Two-Face. So
it's not Tommy Lee Jones
I just
either.
Didn't, it's I just not him. Right.
Now, I will say that he did a better job than the Roger Corman Dr. Doom, who looked like he was playing air piano. Do you remember
oh, God,
that?
Yeah. I love the costume out of that version of Fantasy.
Yeah, the mask was great.
The mask was great.
My problem with that costume was it looked like he was all armored everywhere except his chest. Where the tunic was, it was like they were chintzy and didn't bother putting any armor underneath it, so his chest is all kind of flat. And he's got his armor everywhere and then his flat chest.
Like they only did arms and leg pieces and...
And the other thing that I was kind of taken aback by was that they went to the trouble to have Galactus and then have the shadow
kind
of his
head. Yeah, you didn't never actually see Galactus, and some people are saying that Galactus was a cloud, but I'm like, no, as it passed over, I think, Saturn, you see the shadow of, you know, the big purple and blue dude's helmet.
If you know what you're looking for.
Yes, yeah.
Being the fanboy that I am, I caught it. I was like,
I didn't see that. Yeah.
So why not show a Kirby-esque, I mean, he doesn't have to look like a purple Cuisinart, but which is pretty much what Galactus looks
like.
Pretty much,
yeah.
But you could have done something.
What I heard it explained on, I think it was Two Geeks and Mike in a podcast. I was listening to...
Hi, guys.
Yeah. Some friends of ours that we know. Fellow podcasters, they had said something about I made a suggestion that first the opening should have been you see like Galactus's hand or something in a booming voice, go forth my herald, and you see the Surfer shoot out of that, and really that's all you would have needed to have seen is of Galactus would have been that scene, and then you could have gotten away with the cloud and all that.
Yeah, that's actually that would have been an interesting hook there. And I just still say that they could have shown something.
And left it open for another one.
Right, and it's almost into that 1970s TV territory of having, you know, Spider-Man or the Hulk having the character but then shying away from having them fight supervillains.
Right.
So Spider-Man, with all his superpowers, is stopping bank robberies week after week after week.
Like the crappy-ass TV show?
Well, that was the 70s TV show thing.
Oh,
they would
God,
not have supervillains. And it... Why?
That was bad.
If you buy a radioactive scientist who can turn green and rip car doors off, well, how hard would it be to have his arch enemy, the Abomination, from a similar origin. And they just never wanted to go that route in the 70s. Yeah. So,
Dr. David Banner.
It was almost as if they were afraid, like they were saying, we're afraid that the public won't accept Galactus. Okay, you've got a silver guy on a surfboard. You've got a rocky guy, an invisible woman, a guy that can catch on fire. Well, how much further are you really pushing?
I can kind of see their point on it, though. I mean, to me, yeah, I would want to have seen, you know, a 100-story dude. Of course, Galactus can change his size. It's been shown in the comics before. But your average Joe Sixpack probably would not have bought the Doom. That's the problem the Fantastic Four franchise has had in the past two movies. People have ridiculed it because it's not as grim and gritty as the Batman movies or, you know, even so much as Spider-Man.
Maybe they were afraid of going the Spider-Man route and having too many villains occupying the same space.
I think my guess at the beginning was that they would save actually showing Galactus for either a third Fantastic
Four
movie.
Right, that's what I was thinking too.
Or a spin-off Silver Surfer movie should that happen.
Which actually it's in the works and JMS has taken a first crack at a script or something.
Is Lawrence Fishburne going to be the voice?
Oh, I hope he does because he did great as the voice of the Surfer.
He was so good.
Now, I'll say that something that I think that franchise is missing in general as far as what I consider the Fantastic Four is that the Fantastic World, like they were always going to other dimensions.
Oh, yeah.
Like the very science fiction.
They were explorers. You know, it's a, you know, Reed's finding, okay, we found Dimension 47Q.
Right.
And they take off into that.
And I think they're kind of missing that in the movies. They haven't quite tapped into that Kirby weird dimension.
Can you imagine him trying to do a Kirby dimension and what the special effects budget would be?
Sure, it's like a purple background with black dots in it. That's it's the Kirby energy patented energy blast, right?
Well, it's true too.
And I'm a girl, but even I was kind of bored with the wedding thing and the relationship thing. It's like I want to see superheroes.
What would have been cool? Of course, being a comic geek, I know that at the Fantastic Four wedding, there were just superheroes at the wazoo.
Right.
You know, no superheroes in the audience of this one. But, you know,
they would have had
Tobey Maguire sitting in the audience being the photographer for the bugle or something like that.
Just something small.
You know, for the third movie, they should discover the negative zone.
That would be cool.
Annihilus. Yeah, I love him. He's cool. He looks like a locust or something, but he's cool.
Well, that's essentially what he is a locust. Yeah.
I think that would be a really cool third movie.
That would be pretty darn cool.
And to give a little bit different perspective, I have five boys, three of whom are old enough to see movies like that, and they really liked Fantastic Four 2. They liked the first one. They really liked the second one, but almost all of that is carried on the back of the Human Torch.
Yes.
The character. They love him, and he gets a lot of screen time. I think they probably like the Thing as well, too, who unfortunately doesn't get a lot of action in the second movie, but the Human Torch is really carrying that franchise as far as the kids go, I can tell you that.
And the interaction between Torch and the Thing, which is a thing that out of the comic books. You know, they always had that almost sibling rivalry kind of type of thing, you know. Big brother torments little brother, and, you know, Johnny has been a hot foot or, you know, things like that. That's one complaint from the first movie. Oh, it's too juvenile. The thing where Johnny puts shaving cream in Ben's hand when he's asleep and then tickled his nose. They pull that crap into comic books. You know, they just mess with each other.
Yeah, and that's a good point, and I think they did do that better in this movie, especially, like, the dialogue with the Human Torch, like, well, I would hate to wake up in the morning and find Alicia
buried under a rock slide
and that type of thing. Although my kids were asking me, well, what did he mean by, you know, what was his point with...
He tripped and fell on her.
Right. Oh, yeah. Same, there was a similar moment in the Transformers.
And that's one... I do like the fact that they got the same actress for Alicia. That's because, you know, in the first movie, she had a bit part. Looks nothing like the character in the comic book.
She's pretty, though.
But they really did her real well. And the thing is, they never... having seen the first movie, I knew what happened. And being a comic fan, I knew about the character of Alicia. But they never, you know, went back and told her type of story. And they kind of explained, you know, the Fantastic Four's powers just briefly with a few lines. Never really mentioned anything about Alicia. And in her first couple of scenes, if you didn't already know, you'd been wondering, why is she...
Not looking at the camera?
Not looking at the camera or looking at the person she's talking to. And you don't... I like the fact that they kept it real a little bit like that. You know, it was nothing.
I thought one of the neatest little Easter eggs that they put in there was also Frankie Ray.
Yes.
Who most... Probably a lot of people went over him, but having Nova is, you know... I thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah, and you never would have caught her name, because I'm looking at him going, and then just said Corporal Ray or Lieutenant Ray or whatever her name was when she typed in her code or something on the door. I'm like, oh, no. And then he called her Frankie later on. So.
Well, you know, Frankie and Johnny were lovers.
Don't start singing.
That's one of my favorite movies ever of all time, ever. Al Pacino, Michelle Pfeiffer, Walk Away. Frankie and Johnny.
And I will say, to kind of tie into Transformers, I did not like the portrayal of the military. I'm an ex-military man, and I'm sensitive to the portrayal of the military in movies. And it, you know, you have your stereotypical boneheaded general, and you know the stooges, you know, like the soldiers that were left to guard him. And which, to segue to one of the other movies we're going to talk about. And Transformers didn't suffer from that. That was one of the things I really liked about Transformers was a more positive portrayal of the military guys in that one. So, but it, you know, like where Reed has that whole scene where the general asks him if he ever played football, And then Reed says, no, I was studying, and you know, but now I have the hottest chick on planet Earth or whatever, which is all well and good, but you really don't get to be a general because you played football in high school. And that's not really how it works. And mm-hmm. I just thought that that whole portrayal was kind of ridiculous. But that's just me. I'm sensitive to that, like I said.
Well, it was more of a comic book movie. There's a little over the top in some portrayals. It wasn't a realistic movie. You know, how realistic is a dude that, you know, stretches around or... A little crazy.
Well, I'm just saying that Hollywood likes to pigeonhole the military. Oh, they're all meatheads. You know, they don't think,
especially
and they all
in sci-fi
fall
stuff.
Right, and that's not really, you know, military guys are. There's a lot of huge sci-fi fans in the military. You know, they're just regular people, just like anybody else. Maybe they're a little more to one side or the other politically, however you want to look at it. But they're not all. Dumb people aren't in the military because they're a bunch of dummies or they want to kill everybody without asking questions or that type of thing. So
yeah, they were over the top. So all right, I think we've about run FF out. Anybody got anything left to say on that?
No.
Well, how hot is Jessica Alba though? We got one last time mention that.
And
it's just
I love Jessica Alba in Dark Angel.
She's so much prettier
fantastic.
As a brunette.
Fantastic, no pun intended, but. She's been literally the weakest part of the two movies has been Jessica Alba. I mean, she looks great.
Not to me. But I will say she gets a lot of online flack for because what it is that she has some Latina features and she doesn't look right, say, blonde-haired and blue-eyed. I think there's been some criticism of that. I think she's just hotter than Georgia Asphalt in any way, shape, or form.
Hot, she's hot as hell. You're right. But cool. I just had her... I've liked it, but she just didn't have the, I don't think the right presence for Sue Storm.
She whined a little much in this movie.
You know that too.
Yeah, they portrayed her a lot different in this movie than in the first one. But they always have to put a scene in where she's invisible and naked and something, you know.
You
so
know,
that's
well,
cool.
Yeah, but if she looked as good as she does,
but if you're
going to
do that, go
worry.
Whole hog, okay? Let's see some butt, okay? You know?
Yeah, yeah. That's what
she
I'm
has
saying.
No butt. She's got a non-butt.
And I agree with you, Brad. I always have a theorem of movies is if you're going to show a topless woman, show them from beginning to end. No woman in the movie should have a shirt on. I've never seen the point of a 3-second topless scene in a movie. It's either don't have it because there's no point.
Airplane,
or
man.
Wall to wall. Well, that's for humor. With the jello.
Wall to wall
right.
gets another kind of rating, though.
That's
And before we have to turn explicit, let's turn to one of them. Turn to one of my childhood favorites. I was dreading this movie. As soon as I heard about it, I'm like, oh, God, they're going to screw it up. Transformers.
Now, I'm not the huge childhood Transformers fan. I saw it occasionally and thought it was pretty cool. And, you know, my little cousin had them and people I knew had them. And, you know, I was familiar with it and saw it occasion. But I didn't live and breathe Transformers like a lot of people that are maybe just a year or two younger than me. And,
like me.
I was looking forward to the movie. I thought it'd be pretty cool. And I really liked it. I mean, I was familiar enough with it that I liked it, but not so familiar with it that I was super nitpicky and was worried about every little detail, you know? So, whereas most comic book movies, you know, like Batman and stuff, you know, I live it. I live Batman. So I'm very, very picky over every little tiny detail. So I know where those Transformer fans are coming from that have issues, but overall, very exciting, big, solid movie.
I went into it expecting this, you know, ooey bowl level of crap.
Ooey bowl with a budget, I think, is what Michael Bay's been called.
But I was very, very
pleasant. You're making Glenn twitch to stop there. He never twitches.
If you, I hear if you go in the bathroom and look in the mirror and say Uwe Boll's name 3 times, it appears.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. I cringe every time I hear the word. It's not even a name. It's just a word. It's just, ugh.
But, yeah.
He should not be named.
With Transformers, I was supposed to describe it. You know, I had problems. The only thing I can really do with this is they're nitpicks. That's the only really thing. Like Optimus Prime having flames and being a long-nosed truck. Instead of the flat cap. Okay, what, you know. But when he transformed, he looked cool. It's giant robots beating the absolute living crap out of each other. What else do you really need?
Hot chicks.
They had that.
I know. It was very good.
And wow.
Yeah.
What a hot chick.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, the story was, the overall story, kind of weak, actually. But I thoroughly enjoy the movies. Definitely, out of the movies I've seen this year, it's been my favorite.
Which I totally did not expect from you.
Oh, because I nitpick a lot of crap?
No, because you loved it so much as a child.
Oh, yeah, I love Transformers. See, I've got my original, some of my original Transformer toys.
It's like me and Phantom of the Opera. When that was my one true obsession for life. And when the movie came out, I was so excited. I was so in love with it, ready to be good. Hated big chunks of it. Destroyed me forever. So I totally understand where these fans are coming from that don't even want to see it. I kind of understand
Phantom,
that.
Joel Schumacher redeemed himself just a little bit. So
he cast the wrong actors, but okay.
Okay.
And I have to agree with Glenn. I wasn't a huge Transformers fan, but I think I watched it a little more regularly because I was a big G.I. Joe fan. And here in Louisville, they aired back-to-back, I think, at 4 o'clock. And
yeah,
so I watched
4 to 4:30. It was G.I. Joe and Transformers was 4:30 to 5.
Yeah, something like so. And I was a little too old for the toys, but I worked at a toy store, so I was very familiar with all the characters from both shows. And frankly, I feel like I kind of got a G.I. Joe movie. That's one of the things I loved about it.
Yeah, you were telling us this story at dinner, weren't you?
Right. Well, originally, the DreamWorks had approached Hasbro to get the rights to make a G.I. Joe film. Then after the Iraq War started in 2003, I guess they felt that it was a topic that they didn't really want to touch into with, you know, U.S. soldiers fighting terrorists as, you know, the good guys. And I don't have a problem with that, but I guess they felt that maybe it wouldn't go over that good. So Hasbro suggested Transformers to them. They went with that, but there really is a level of, with the team of specialists that start the movie, almost a G.I. Joe-like feel. You have your blonde leader, Duke-like, and then you have all the different characters that kind of look like, one guy looks like Dusty, one guy looks like Roadblock, and they don't call him that, but you can really kind of read that in.
I didn't catch that initially, but after he was saying that when we were out at dinner earlier, I'm like, damn, he's right. And yeah, I can really see that. If there had been like a throwaway line or something, I think it would have made it a little bit better. But pretty cool.
I was really hoping that at the end, when they, I don't want, you know, spoiler
alert,
when the Secretary of Defense says they're disbanding Sector 7, that they would say we're going to form a new team to fight these weird threats that might come up, and you wouldn't even have to name the team, but just say, okay, the soldiers that were fighting alongside the Autobots in the movie would be the core of this new team, and that would just be your lead in. To a G.I. Joe thing, but military action wise, and this is almost like an episode. Certain parts of it of a show you would see on the military channel or the History Channel. Just some great, the Pentagon was helping Michael Bay out because he's worked with them in the past, and just some great footage of American weapons in action.
Well, speaking of footage of weapons in action, something that I didn't notice, but I had saw the posting about it on Dig was. It looks like they've reused a shot from Pearl Harbor. There's, from a scene in Transformers, we see the big aircraft carrier. Somebody had taken a still from the trailer of Transformers, put it next to a still from Pearl Harbor, and the two shots are virtually identical. All they did was had CGI'd in some planes on the deck of the aircraft carrier for Transformers. Somebody said, oh, they just blocked the same shot. But no, if you look at the clouds that are in the shot, it's exactly the same. So I mean, it's like they reused some kind of stock footage or something.
Well, I think Michael Bay really was trying to save as much money as he could. This movie was made for $150 million, and it looks like a $300 million movie. So I was saying, I think Evan Almighty cost $190 million.
Which is a travesty of human nature.
And what this movie felt to me like I should go back out to the front and give the people more money. For what I saw compared to some of the other big movies this year, I definitely got my $8 worth.
We did the whole Super Director's Hall thing on it. So our matinee tickets were as much, if not more, than a normal movie ticket price. And
But since we were going to be in seats for how many hours that day,
yeah,
half of it was in really comfy seats, so it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, it was it was well worth it. And I want to go see it again
at least
one more time.
I was not expecting to enjoy it so much. I mean, I'm 30 years old. I know the show that it was on when I was little, but I didn't watch it. If I did, I caught little bits and pieces here and there. And I'm like, oh, this might be okay. Shia LaBeouf's in it, and I love him, so it can't be bad. But I really love this movie. I want to see it again.
I'd see it a second time just for Megan Fox.
She's gorgeous. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Kind of reminds me of a Jennifer Connelly
kind
of thing. You know?
Yes, very much so.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I had some problems with the movie. Like, okay, sure, they kept the Autobots, you know, cars and trucks and all that. You know, like Bumblebee. Come on. Could have had him as a VW. I could see not going with the 60s version of the VW, going with the new Beatles style. But they at least did a nice homage to that on the car lot scene where the Bumblebee, the Camaro, was parked next to a yellow VW bug. That was pretty cool.
It was smart and funny and cute, and it was really good.
My nitpicks with it would be, I didn't have a problem with the Bumblebee. I felt the Camaro was a little bit more befitting a soldier, which is what Bumblebee was supposed to be. It was more of like a young soldier type. But Michael Bay's directing, there's moments of brilliance. Like I mentioned the slow motion scene where Ironhide uses his guns to boost over the girl while he's doing a forward flip so he doesn't land on her, which is just done in slow motion. It's an amazing scene. But sometimes it's like it's being filmed by a kid with a play school, you know, camera, and you can't tell what's going on. It took me two viewings to just, I got a much better idea of what was going on in the final battle the second time, just because I knew the sequence of events, and I was able to say, okay, this is, sometimes it's an arm, a leg, a hand getting blown off, a robot hand getting blown off, but it's just hard to tell what's going on, and that's totally Michael Bay's MTV quick cut directing style, which is Armageddon. What gives me a headache to watch the way he directed that movie.
You know what? Okay, I need to have my blonde moment for the day because I had forgotten that he directed that. And then when the kid makes his line,
this is so much cooler than Armageddon, dude.
Yeah,
that was I mean, it was a fun. Deep movie? No, not a bit. Not in the least.
There are deep ideas that they touch at, like the sociological, thing about how it's the shotguns and two-way radios that save them in the end. It's not the high-tech cell phones. It's not the, the high-tech weaponry. It's the old-school stuff that saves them.
Battlestar.
Oh, God. But,
You weren't supposed to mention Battlestar.
Ever again. Ooh, I made it. I made a big blue one there. I'm sorry. And John Voight, he makes me happy, and I wish he was the president instead of Mr. Red Sox wanting a ding dong. But okay,
John Voight. I thought you said John Boy.
I heard John Boy too, and then I had to stop and think for a second.
Waltons.
He'd make a good president too. He was in it and scared the hell out of me, but that's okay.
Yeah. It was kind of that big, creepy thing.
Transformers, it was just a good, fun, popcorn kind
really
of movie.
Was.
Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yeah, his best movie, Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh, God.
I need to review that.
That's a guilty pleasure if ever there was one.
I mean, when the spaceship has tits,
bad plan.
It's going to be
such a bad plan.
A movie worth watching.
Yeah, make a boob out of yourself.
And for the kids who've watched Shia LaBeouf on Even Stevens, he's grown up and come into his own. And he's excellent.
Indy's son.
His comic timing is fantastic, and I just love him.
Yeah, he was really good. I liked him from Constantine.
Yes.
And
I
was looking forward to see what they're going to do with him in the new Indy.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I just hope he doesn't burn himself out because he's in like four movies this year. So I hope he doesn't burn himself out before he hits 30.
Well, at least Michael Bay didn't kill him doing some of the stunts and stuff that he had him do. From what I heard,
my God, I know
he really pushed him to the limit.
You know what? I would never think of him as an action hero, but I think he's earned his cred in this movie.
Yeah,
I'm being chased by Satan's Camaro.
And I have to say, I had not seen him in anything. I probably had wandered into the room when my kids were watching Even Stevens or Holes or something else that he was in. But easily, the humor in the movie could have been ruined because there's a lot of shots. I call them 3-point shots at humor in this movie that mostly work. A different actor or even a little bit weaker writing, the movie could have been ruined because that's a long stretch of the movie in the middle.
Yeah, you know, stuff like the dog taking a leak on Ironhide.
Some of that was a little ridiculous, but most of the stuff works. Like the scene with the garden goes on a little too long, but the parents, I just love the...
My question on that, though, is how in the hell do you not hear six giant robots running around
they're
your yard outside?
Aliens.
Earthquake. Aftershock.
Yeah.
Right?
I love how he didn't... Yeah, he was the first one hiding under the table, the first one
these.
In the tub. Oh,
my bad.
But and then the one... My biggest weakness with the movie was 2 hours and 23 minutes. The Sector... John Turturro and the Sector 7 parts were really annoying.
They could have skipped that.
And they
could
have cut
been okay.
A lot of that out. Yeah. Somehow...
I'm anxious to see what they do on DVD to see what they have cut out, what kind of deleted scenes.
Well, one of the biggest... I say a plot hole, but if you notice Barricade, after Bumblebee beats the crap out of him early in the movie, then he's shown escorting Bone Crusher in the freeway scene that's famous from the trailers where Optimus Prime kicks his butt in about 2.5 seconds. But then Barricade's never seen again. He's not in the final battle. So either we're supposed to be led to believe he escaped, just decided not to show up for the final fight, or there's a deleted scene with him because he just disappears after that, never shows up for the final fight. And Starscream is the only one that's shown escaping. True to character, he takes a couple of shots from the Air Force, and
later.
He hits the road. So
that's the one thing I, with the Decepticons, of course, it was kind of funny because, you know, it's a battle of good versus evil. Bad guys weren't in it that much, really. Yeah. I mean, you saw, you know, Blockade and a couple of the other ones, but really, you know, the fearless leader Megatron, no, not so much.
Yeah, I do kind of worry for the Decepticon fans that they really didn't get a whole lot of screen time, and you know, if you really liked them, it's more
shared. I hate to use the word evil, but it's kind of a scary thing with the government and how much you see that they're hiding. They've had this thing in storage for, you know, since the 30s. You know,
built Hoover Dam because of
and it kind of makes you wonder who's the good guy, who's the bad guy here.
Well, I don't know. I didn't really get that out of it because, I mean, of course the government's going to keep that secret.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just a given.
You know, my question would be, Ryan had a completely different track on it, but the fact that all the bad guys were public servants or vehicles that would be used by the good guys. You know, you
protection
had your,
kind of thing.
Your military jets, so your... The vehicle they used over in Iraq for the roadside bombs. I don't know what the hell it's called.
He knows.
The MH-53 Pavlo was the blackout.
Awesome.
It's a military.
Yeah,
you've
seen all
helicopter.
These military vehicles and police vehicles.
And then they turn
that are
evil.
The good guy.
Yeah.
Well, and my take on that is from the original series, the Autobots were all laborer on Cybertron, laborer units, and the Decepticons were the military. Megatron was like the general of Cybertron's military, so they were all military vehicles. So I think they adopted those forms on Earth because that was more of their nature to start with.
But in the movie, they just seem to have whatever's closest to them. They just
Well, from the background story, I think the Decepticons under Starscream, they did not know where Megatron was, and they didn't have all the pieces to the puzzle of how to find him. They've been here for a while just hiding out.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting, because there's that scene in the movie where Starscream gives them all the
and
go.
And they see all their codenames.
They show their codenames, and they all take off to join that last battle. So I think they kind of insinuate that they've been here longer than the Autobots have, just trying to figure out what's going on.
Which is different than... Well, no, actually, I think they arrived on Earth at the same time in G1.
Right.
It's just a little bit scary when he's calling for help when his car's being stolen and the cop car's out to get him. Just a little bit scary.
Well, and that similar scene when the Air Force guy in the unit is calling in help from an F-22.
And it's firing
and it's,
on him. Yeah.
It's Starscream. He's trying to radio it. Like, you know, and it's not who they think it is. Which is also interesting how the Autobots kind of lose their... Like, Ironhide is kind of like, holy crap, that's Starscream, to kind of show you that, you know, they're kind of afraid of some of the Decepticons that show up. So...
Well, yeah, that's one thing. At least they did portray it kind of like it's Megatron, you know? And even Prime kind of went into it like, you know, I'm going to lose, you know, against Megatron. And, you know, here's the backup
fails,
plan
yeah.
when I die, you know. I mean, so at least I did appreciate that. I'm not a huge Decepticon fan. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying at least the bad guys have to be strong. Mm-hmm. You know, the heroes have to fear the bad guys. Mm-hmm. The bad guy has to be stronger than the hero, so the hero has to struggle and you can appreciate it. And they did do that, but just very briefly,
mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah. And this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah,
so to wrap it up, I'll say I think it's an enjoyable, fun movie, and the effects are great, and Megan Fox is hot. So go
hella,
see it.
Hella hot.
And if I can say for people who've got not super young, but younger kids, there was no blood, really, no gratuitous human violence. You know, it's not as scary, I think, as some people would assume for smaller, you know, not small kids, but like
Scorpion,
you know,
knock might freak some little kids out.
No, but like,
and there is Sam's happy time though.
Yeah,
well, I got asked a lot of questions about what is masturbation.
Well,
which
I asked my dad some questions after Howard the Duck, so it's okay.
I asked the guy at the booth why I gave money to see Howard the Duck. So
yeah, well,
now, there's a guilty pleasure.
I was on cable for that one.
Or is that not even worthy of guilty pleasure?
No.
Although I've always liked what's her name.
You liked her so much.
Yeah.
Oh dear, Leah Thompson. Yes.
There you go. All right.
Marty's mother.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anybody got any last thoughts on Transformers?
I want to see it again.
I do too.
I'll be seeing it twice more. So just because I have obligations.
All right. Ryan, you gonna catch it again?
I'd like to. My wife has forbidden me from seeing it again because she didn't like the fact that I've already seen it twice. But I feel obligated to go buy another ticket for it when Harry Potter comes out because I really don't like Harry Potter. And I'd rather say, well, instead of seeing Harry Potter, I'll see Transformers.
I'll meet you here.
Build up those second
weekend
numbers. All right.
That's true.
Let's take a break, recharge after this epic movie discussion, and we will be back right after this.
Parking buying tickets. Prime fought Megatron many times, and it rocked. As a pistol, he was always going off half-cocked. And when Prime's fisticuffs had been taken and stolen, he'd shove his long barrel up Prime's semicolon. Now that's what I call taking it up the tailpipe.
Oh, Luke, that pun was so bad, it makes me want to throw myself into the Grand Canyon.
So that would make you a cliff jumper?
Oh, jeez, one more like that and I will blast you from here to the Loch Ness.
Well, that's a grim lock. Oh, come on, Earl, you're a filth star. You can handle it.
Luke, it's enough to make any star scream.
Pathetic fools! There is no escape!
Then in 2005, they fought their final bout. With his last ounce of strength, he knocked Megatron out. On his deathbed, poor Optimus Prime there was laid, just so Hasbro could sell the new toys they had made. Then the optics went dim on that great space invader. Spike cursed to the skies, but it was edited later. The new prophesized leader, Hot Rod, he was chosen. We wanted John Wayne, and they gave us Judd Nelson. Now I'll sing you the ballad of Optimus Prime. He was the greatest Transformer ever of all time. He was a big, big robot and a really nice guy. He was proof that a hero's more than meets the eye. Hot Rod versus Galvatron ain't quite the same. Even those who loved them thought it was comparatively lame. So we mourned for the deaths of our brave fighting robots. The alternative? Go home and play with some GoBots!
No! No! No!
That
no.
Leader won! Oh, Turbo! Psychic!
They couldn't sell anything!
Thing. Oh my god! Unicron killed me!
Oh my god! Gobatron my ass.
Resurrected by forces they don't understand. A powerful hate plague they call Fandemand. From his grave shift soon, Optimus Prime then arose to save us from lame toys with lamer kids' shows. Those headbaster beast machines might confuse me, but with Prime back in charge, it's all good, you'll agree. Now immortal, his red and bold chassis is seen on DVD, eBay, and Toy Fair magazine. Now I'll sing you the ballad of Optimus Prime. He was the greatest Transformer ever of all time. He was a big rig, a robot, and a really nice guy. He was proof that a hero is.
And wow, that wound up being...
No wow in this episode.
Oh, yeah, no wow. Glenn hadn't got a chance to talk about it yet.
Yeah.
But that turned out to be an epic movie-length discussion.
Because it was an epic movie.
It was.
Yeah,
it should be.
You know, blockbuster movie season, yeah. It better be living up to that. We better be wanting to talk about it, or it's pretty lame.
Yeah.
Hopefully everyone's enjoyed the summer movie discussion that we seem to have turned into there.
Yes. And there'll be more, because there are more things to see. Harry Potter's coming out. Mm-hmm. We start to see Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yep.
I've seen it, but I'll keep quiet for you
guys. I've heard it. Okay. More sizzle than steak.
I really like it. I think it had a darker feel to it than the others.
Mm-hmm. Keira Knightley gets on my nerves.
Not as much humor.
Yeah, but she looks good, so she gets away with it.
It was good, though. Definitely worth seeing. Right. Of course, it'll probably be on some little small screen now with all these other big movies coming out.
Yeah, probably head over to the Village 8, catch for a buck, something like that. But, so we make any closing thoughts?
Go see it.
Yes, I think if you were a big fan of the Transformers, you will not be disappointed.
No.
Definitely.
And even if you weren't, you'll not be disappointed. You're not going to miss anything if you have never watched an episode of the show.
If you're a huge Transformer fan, go in expecting total crap. And you will be completely surprised.
Oh, that's not quite fair.
Well, no, I'm a big Transformers fan, you know. And, you know, hell, I used to drive a GMC Yukon that I called Optimus, big red truck.
He's such a dork. We love him.
Oh, it had a big Autobot sticker on the windshield, too. And I loved it and went in, and the movie was awesome.
And the soundtrack is awesome.
there were some odd omissions that from the movie, like the
not the kind you can
Transformers the movie soundtrack has a version of the theme is band I had never heard of.
Is that Mute Math?
Yeah, and it's actually a pretty good cover of the theme. I mean, I really like it, but the theme's not in the movie. It wasn't even over the credits, which I found a little odd.
I was fully expecting the even the cartoon theme in the credits because the first Spider-Man did that with the '60s Spider-Man mm-hmm. theme. So
I expected it like on somebody's radio in the background. That like if you were really paying attention, you could hear it. But no,
I would have hoped that, like with you know, with Bumblebee talking mainly through song clips, you know, on the radio and everything, that maybe would have been some homages from the first movie, like, you know, played the, you know, the touch or just some little bits like that. I mean, it would have been the perfect opportunity for that.
You know, that guy has a new album out. He wrote a song that he wanted to get into the movie, and they didn't use it. The guy that performed the mm-hmm. touch. But it's on his album. I can't think of the guy's name, but...
I'll have it in the show notes. I'll link it.
I can go dig the CD out somewhere, but I had a special order because it was out of print.
So he did make a song for this movie, but it was not used. So
don't have to pick it up then. So, all right. Well, hope you guys have enjoyed the Pod Culture Summer Movie Spectacular.
See you in the front row.
All right. And we're out of here, guys.
Cheers.
Be seeing you.
Good night.
And if you want to reach us here at Pod Culture Central, there are a few different ways, including these email addresses.
You can email any one of us at Brad, Glenn, or Christina at podculture.net.
And should they want to reach us the old-fashioned way?
That address would be Pod Culture, care of Chroma Entertainment, P.O. Box 4117, Jeffersonville, Indiana, 47131-4117.
You can also give us a call on the Pod Culture voicemail line, and that phone number is 1-206-338-3POD.
And there are also the official Pod Culture forums located at forums.podculture.net. And you'll find a link to that on our website, www.podculture.net.
So drop us a line, give us a call, or send us an MP3. Let us know how we're doing and what you'd like to hear on the show. We'd love to hear from you.
Pod Culture, equal opportunity geekness.
Be seeing you.
Function!
What a bitch!